Only feel is the Kensington Oval is a more suitable venue. Down to brass tacks.
Williams Metals, choose us for your building needs at Williams Metals. We got what you need. We are the leaders in building materials. We offer lumber, cement, concrete, copper, aluminium, and all type of metals for construction. Get galvanized sheets, welding and plumbing products for sure. You can find that and so much more. Friendly staff to help with your search at King Garden, St. Thomas, and Lowlands Christ Church. Williams Metals, we got what you need.
Well, I'll give my 2 cents worth on this picking the crop issue. Primarily believe I'm not an authority on it, but I've been fortunate enough to be on the pick of the crop final stage before in 2019, and I've been a semi-finalist. I can't say a perennial semi-finalist, but I've been on the semi-final stage before. I think there needs to be a change in the venue for the pick of the crop. Let's just start there. The National Botanical Gardens present some technical challenges in the execution of the event, not only from a sound perspective, because the amphitheater atmosphere, which I think they're going for, there's some challenges there from a technical sound perspective. The sloping of the venue doesn't allow for a suitable event for pick the crop finals. The last option, which was in the amphitheater, which I believe that space is soon to be called the Richard Stout Amphitheater. That wasn't suitable, and this year option was even worse. And I'm not speaking specific to any individual or any of the teams that would have coordinated this. I'm quite aware that it's not the only the National Culture Foundation who advises on this, but they're also technical experts who are engaged. But I also want to say, I'm concerned about the process of the judging of the pick of the crop finals. I was on brass tacks more than one occasion before, since the finals, but I reserve my comment to subsequent to the competition being held. I think it's time to consider the return of a semifinals, even if you remain with the one sound competition. As a listener attending the pick of the crop finals, it wasn't the best crop of talent that we have over there. And I am not making an argument for myself, but I'll do this for the others. I believe that there were individuals like Jace from House of Soca. I believe Raheem Taylor from House of Soca was an excellent option. I also believe that if you look at Doyen from House of Soca, she was phenomenal. I am not a judge, and we recognize the judge's decision is final. But even on the big show end, Betty B was outstanding on judging night. And I also want to say, if I am quite honest and sincere with my approach, and I endeavor to do that always, I also believe that if you are going to look at the pool of talent that was there, classic could have also been taken into consideration. So Adrian Clark, the new reigning monarch of Barbados from the Barbados Public Workers Cooperative Credit Union Limited Big Show, he won the crown last singing a song, "Who the Hell Is Be Judging We?" And that was a song that won the monarch. I think we need to ask that question again, because it was not the best pool of talent that we had at the finals, and that has been a popular refrain by many individuals, and that beside the change of the venue. I don't want to put Ziggy in the hot seat, because I also know that last year he was one of the pick the crop judges, and I didn't make the finals then, but nonetheless, I just wanted to raise those points that individuals would have made. But I'm also getting concerns on the Bridgetown Market. Bridgetown Market needs to be back on Guiana Highway 1 location. Street festivals here in the cities, the annual, they never move around. Ziggy, I'll turn to you. What are your thoughts on the Bridgetown Market? Did you produce Bridgetown Market before?
No. That would have been Randy Eastman. I would have assisted him. The closest they did to that would have been the recently joined World Cup team, the entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs of Barbados, the Broad Street market they had. But I would touch on the Pickety Crop a bit. One of the conversations I had this weekend was the semifinals. There's a need for the semifinals to return, right? Even if the persons have two songs and go to a final with one, their strongest song, then that may add to the value and the more attraction and the audience experience for the finals. But we need to also, in terms of the venue choice for the final, we came through tanks in an intimate setting, which is an enclosed area. We go to semifinals, the IJ Museum, which is also an intimate enclosed area. Then we go to a white space. So it's a little difficult for those participating in the final or the competition at that point who have not to transition from the intimate setting of a gymnasium or a tent venue to that big open space. And it's also for the patrons. The patron experience is just as valuable as the contenders. So that needs to be seriously revisited. And I will push for our semifinals. The semifinals does add that extra fire to the festival as well. You know, it gives that buzz leaning into the finals. So that's my 2 cents worth on that.
Well, let's see what the next caller has to say. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon. Morning.
Good afternoon. How are you? Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes. Well, let me say this. I heard someone refer to the origins of the steel pan. And I think the person said referred to a Major Griffin as well, correct? Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this to you. When I was in my 20s, there was a man, he's still alive, Orville Reese, who was with the Barbados Regiment training to be a bugler. And I remember him saying some Englishman had come down and was criticizing what the band was playing at the time. And he said to me that the person, the Barbadian, got very angry and said, "Hey, that Jonas Nathaniel Griffiths don't know what he's talking about. He knows what he's talking about." I remember those words very clearly because the name of that person was Lieutenant Joseph Nathaniel Griffiths,
yeah.
Not Major Griffin or what we call it. Now, this Lieutenant Griffiths made the debut of the steel band to the world on the 26th of July 1951 on, I think it was the Thames Embankment. He had a band there of what they were called hooligans till they started playing. And if you get a picture, there's a picture available of that evening. If you get a picture of it, you'll notice they were all decked out in what I like to call the Kitchener hat. Because in 67, I was studying in Trinidad, and Lord Kitchener lived not too far from where he was. He was always in a suit and this kind of hat. All of those people were in hat. Now, at the time, Griffiths was conducting, he was director of something called TAF4, the Trinidad of Steel Percussion Orchestra. And from there, he had started out life in the police band here. He had then moved to the States and was a jazz band sometime. And then he moved back and forth in the Caribbean until he finally ended up in Trinidad. But he played in Grenada. He played in St. Vincent. I think it was the St. Vincent Philharmonic Orchestra. He played in St. Lucia, and he had a stint with the rhythms of Martinique. So it'd be interesting if the cultural people who are really interested in the history of the steel pan, and I'm not saying that he is the one who started the steel band, but he's the one who put it on the map. There is a picture available, and I would think it's a beautiful picture. They should get a copy and preserve that as a part of our history. It's very important.
I think Ziggy would like that. I thank you for your contribution. I think Ziggy would like that photograph.
I have it.
You actually have the photograph already. Perfect. All right, down to brass tacks. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. You're a guest, not me. Before I go on, let me first congratulate the young lady from St. Lucia, who has now become the fastest woman in the world, and also the young lady from Dominica, who won gold in the triple jump. Now, last while listening to the fighters on VOB, I realized that the production coming through the radio station was not nice. And it was one of the one that I listened to for years on the OB. And I find there were a lot of things that had left me ready to think why you are producing the fibers and the quality of the music that is being transferred to the radios at home of people is of such poor production. Now, getting back to the same fibers, you have a scenario where you had 9 collections for one thing entering, and you're telling me that out of these 9, not one could even come in the first 3. And then we are talking about quality and the material. So it seems to me that, like you said, or somebody said, if you had 2 songs and choose the strongest songs, most probably a lot of those people that went out there on Friday night might not be there. So we then have to look at that again and how we go about judging these collections. Because up to now, I can't understand why there were certain names that were left out. I mean, I was not there for the judgment, but at least to say, I was not impressed at all with Friday night.
Well, I think that the call here now has been that there are several logistical challenges with the Piggity Crop finals. It started just before 8 o'clock, before 9 o'clock p.m., I believe it was. And I know, I don't think by a stretch of the imagination that would have been the intention or the hope for the foundation to have the Piggity Crop finals starting late, especially for the second consecutive year, for that challenge to persist. There must be some challenge there. I know that the Kensington Oval venue was not available for some reason or the other. But I do hope that, you know, there's a return to the venue. But as well, to your point in specific, I think there is some consideration for a relook at the judging criteria for the Piggity Crop competition. So I do take that point and appreciate you for calling this afternoon and sharing your view. I just want to touch on a very interesting point, and I think Richard, Adzil, and Christian, I know you play Mass across the region. The bands have evolved over a period of time. Adzil, I don't know if you can speak on this point specific, because I know that you're a judge tomorrow for the finals for Grand Kaduma Day. But Mass has evolved over a period of time, and individuals are saying there's no longer that traditional element in the masquerading. It's evolved, there's the pretty feathers now, and over a period of time, there's a lack of those traditional elements, even if to the extent of the floats have now phased out, the traditional costumes with depicting specific teams. You no longer see individuals up front in the bands anymore. You don't see not necessarily a king and queen in the band in many of the bands as you would have seen. Richard, I know that you were the first in Barbados to really evolve what Mass looks like. I'll give you the opportunity to start by sharing why some of these changes would have come about and how can we still preserve the elements of the traditional Mass.
Yes, thank you, Jamal. So again, when we started Crop Over, we jumped into the band arena. We were very, very young. And we were under the guidance of Marcia Chandler in the day, Beige. So our role as youngsters were to basically manage the band and do the events and so on. And to be honest, in those days, in the 90s, we were into dancehall and hip-hop and everything else that the youngsters were into. We weren't soca kids, right? However, Marcia guided us into the actual Crop Over fraternity. And I remember when we first entered, I spent many hours listening to fireworks to learn the culture, and I ended up falling in love with the culture. So at the end of the day, we were definitely non-traditional, but what really anchored Beige in the festival, a very critical component, was always the fantasy prize based on the theme. And that has been removed now since last year from the prize standpoint from the NCF. And that was critical, because no matter how non-traditional Bayesian International was, I was personally encouraged as the creative director and the marketing manager of the band and band leader to learn about the festival, to learn about everything but Crop Over, so that we can have a chance at this fantasy prize. And so said, so done. You know, Bayesian won that prize probably about 10 times over the years. And the theme was never, you know, about typical flying fish and the donkey cart and so on, but it was always a theme based around our culture. It was always a theme based that came out of young Barbadians' minds. Now, over the years, Bayesian has gotten a lot of controversy because we've done things differently. You know, we've gone outside of Barbados to source our materials to make sure we can compete globally and so on. But again, the most important thing is that we always had that centralized effort to make sure that our theme was competitive. And I think removing that fantasy prize from the platform for bands may certainly dilute the core mission to keep the bands focused on our Barbadian component of our festival. That's critical.
Azil, your thoughts?
I agree with Richard on that, removing the fantasy. And the thing is, you can always, there's nothing wrong with the traditional, but as you said, be evolving, be growing. And you don't stay in the same place. So you can always open up the field that you will have like different categories. You say he would have concentrated on fantasy because, you know, and they did a very good job with that. But there might still be people that want to do traditionalists. Why not let them, you know, continue? So I have the categories to suit. And I will do the judging in the character categories. There are still those people out there that would have loved to see King and Queen dance. I know that it's from a standpoint of money, because that's what it comes down to, prize money and stuff like that. And it really costs from my own experience, because I used to carry individual costume for years, won the competition several times. And I also, from the beginning, worked with Robert Weeks and all those in producing King and Queen costumes. And those costumes can come, the bill for them could be really high. And the last year I would have played male individual because I would structure myself to go, and I funded the costume myself. I didn't have a sponsor. That costume cost me, in all honesty, just over $4,000 to produce and put it on the road. The price for that at the time, I think, was $2,205. So you see the math, as the young people say, was a math end. So you're doing it out of love and out of tradition. So I think along the way, that is how come we ended up falling off with the individuals. And then some of the other bands would not have been interested in doing Kings and Queens, like Richard will tell you, because the money you would have to put in doing that, short of the fact that you would not have gotten certain concessions, because over the years, I would have gone to Mass in St. Vincent, Trinidad, in my years of working at LIAC, Grenada, all over. And I know Trinidad and St. Vincent used to have a duty-free window. I don't know if they still do it. Or then masqueraders, where they could bring in things like the fiberglass, rods, and the different things they needed with the window in there to bring them in to construct the costume. Unfortunately, I don't know if we do have that in Barbados. I don't think they did.
There is that provision is there now. Truly cultural
industry. No, but I think at the time when I was doing it, it was not yet there. Yeah. I know it's been there since then. So at that time, you paid full points for everything. So you really was doing what you was doing from the love of your heart and for the love of the festival, which is how we always did it.
Yeah.
So really and truly, I, you know, they, it's a matter of collaborating, and I think that all can exist. The fantasy, I would not have removed the fantasy altogether, but, you know, I know that there's this thing about sticking to a Barbadian tradition, but I think both could coexist. Okay. And you can also have a category for the younger people, because the younger people are things into things now, like AnimeCon and stuff like that, doing excellent costume work. You can have an area for besides fantasy, for futuristic, because people can come up with futuristic ideas. Suppose they wanted to create a planet on the road, a different planet, or what they figure it would look like, and what the people would look like in costume. You know, it opens your mind to the creativity. You can't just stagnate the creativity. But what anybody can imagine can happen.
Certainly. Well, it's Brassat Sunday brought in association with Willems Industries, Inc.
Who's got conduits, fittings, dimmers, switches, ballasts, bells and brackets? We do. Williams.
does wiring, installations, maintenance for homes and business we do?
Williams. From electrical contracting and maintenance to consumer products, Williams Electrical should be your first stop for all things electrical, including UL-approved products of proven quality.
Who's got the know-how just for you? Electrify service do we do.
Williams Electrical.
This is Down to Brass Tacks, Brass Tacks Sunday, brought to you in association with Williams Industries, Inc. We're talking about Cropover, the business of Cropover. If you're now joining us, the panel is David Ziggy Walcott, Adzel Stewart, Christian Kendall Rock, and Richard Haynes. Christian, with mass now evolving across the region, can you share with us, give us some insight about the developments and what are the challenges we are having with Cropover from the competitors externally?
I think it is, Richard and Adel said it perfectly. It goes down to the concessions and having those battery windows. It is, for me, is also in terms of the human element, the way it relates to the manpower. Most of the bands have to outsource from primarily Trinidad and getting a lot of the feather back packs made and the wire bras and what's not. We don't have a lot of persons. If I don't think any, I'm subject to correction if Richard or Azza has begun that. But I don't think anybody here is capable to do the amount of wire bras and back pack in capacity that is needed for the bands. So you have persons who have to get these things done in Trinidad, bring them in either in suitcases or ship them across, and all these things add to the cost value.
But there's a culture industry. But Christian, there's a culture industries development act. Doesn't that allow for the duty free concessions with regards? I believe that was introduced by Senator John King and the CEO of the NCF, Carol Roberts Reefer, in 2019. Doesn't that provide a provision for that?
There are some provisions, yes, but I just spoke about the human element to it, that there are not persons here that are qualified. So when you don't have to bring in these persons, I don't know if NCF is refunding tickets or hotel costs and different things like that. The other thing is, as Richard pointed out earlier, in terms of corporate Barbados, I don't think necessarily that it is all of corporate Barbados is not interested in the festival. I think the problem comes to that. You have both the private entities and the foundation all pulling from the same pot. So well, the money.
Well, Christian, I'll ask Richard to bring some clarity to that in terms of the production of costumes. Richard, your experience in this area, can you give us your thoughts here?
Right. So when we first started, we were doing costumes primarily out of Trinidad. We actually brought in a team from Trinidad to teach us and show us how to make costumes. This concept evolved rapidly and unapologetically. I would say that Bears got in the business as business people. We got in the business not as starving artists, but certainly to make money. And our concept was this: if we can make money, what that means is that we'll be able to survive. The business can survive and grow and contribute to Cropover over a period of time. So we decided to find the most cost-effective ways to produce costumes. And eventually, that led us to China, where we were basically sourcing our costumes from China to Barbados, right? So we're always finding ways to cut the costs and make sure that it's more cost-effective and so on. And again, it was very controversial over the years in terms of, you know, where we source our materials from. But the reality is that we're not competing with other bands in Barbados. Barbados is competing with the region and really and truly with the world to drive people to our country for Cricket. And if we were not business focused, we would not have survived for 25 years, you know. So it's not in terms of, you know, where the materials came from. It was where can we cost effectively find materials to keep the cost down for locals and keep the quality up so we can compete with Grenada and Jamaica and St. Lucia and Antigua and all of these places, you know? So that's been our approach over the years, and we continue to focus on that approach.
Richard, your Beige International is not on the road this year. Can you share with us some of the reasons that were taken into consideration for this, what I should say, a halt in production?
Well, my brother, it's been 25 years, Jamal, of Beige being on the road. 22 bands, 21 of them consecutively, obviously stalled by COVID, and then one last year. So the reason for us coming out of the festival, primarily, is to try and seek succession, a succession plan. And too often, I find that Black businesses in particular don't have a succession plan in place, right? So we appreciate that, again, we started this thing when we were in our young 20s. We're no longer there, you know? And I believe that Beige deserves, like every other brand, a breath of fresh air. So we're currently seeking a new team to take the steering wheel and hopefully take the brand forward for the next 25 years. But I think after this period of time, we have done what we have to do. And I will certainly be staying on board, retaining some shares in the company, staying on as chairman. But the reality is that at this stage, we need new, fresh, young ideas to take this brand forward, like what we did 25 years ago. And that's the decision. And you know, if we stayed on for another 5-10 years, Jamal, the brand eventually will become will be dead. You know, so we're at that stage now, and I'm happy to release the reins and let somebody else take it. Yeah, and we're going through that process right now. So stand by.
Well, look forward for that. Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I don't know where to start.
Start somewhere.
As related to the celebrating of the 50th year of Quavova, it's sad that when certain decisions are being made, we tend to left for our elderly. We should have had a Quavova museum where costumes of past years would be kept. And then you could have done like from year one right down to year 50, if you understand what I mean, even with the music that existed then right down to the present. Right? That's just an idea. Ideas can either be added to or stripped down to suit whatever purpose. But we need to get our elderly people involved in certain things. My next thing, you, Jamal, your song, fantastic arrangement. And I'm not saying so to impress you. I am really a red plastic bike person and a Bob Marley person. As far as AC's Randy Crown is concerned, as you say he's putting on a podcast, I put it on my own personal podcast too. I am not listening to another AC song. I think that the role was hard done. I feel so.
Well, you know, like myself, I hope you can take the fact that the judge's decision is final, so we sometimes have to go with the results when we subject ourselves to a process. You know? Well, anyways, thanks for your contribution. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good afternoon. This is the 12:30 edition of the latest from Starcom Network News. With the details, I am Oliver Norville. A flash flood watch is in effect for Barbados. Meteorologist Andrew Daniel says there is a possibility of flooding.
Possible impacts. There is a medium possibility of significant flooding, which may result in possible moderate to significant water settlements on roads and fields at the foot of hills and coastal roads, adjustments to water levels of existing water bodies, ponds, etc., and delays on traffic routes, with some roads becoming impassable. Unstable conditions ahead of an approaching tropical wave are currently affecting the island, and rainfall totals of up to 20 millimeters have already occurred this morning across the island. Occasional showers are expected to continue this afternoon and into tonight, with a further 25 to 50 millimeters in moderate to heavy showers possible.
Meteorologist Andrew Daniel. Four-day morning, Juve Barnes are reporting a successful staging of this year's event. Bridgetown was transformed into a party early Saturday morning as revelers from 29 registered bands took over the streets of the nation's capital, which began at Queen's Park and made its way down to the mighty Griner Highway. Starcom Network News spoke with band leader of Adinkra, the band, Ryan Leacock, who said they had a blast.
We had an absolute blast on the road. The experience, I think, just flawless for the feedback we've been getting from our patrons. We definitely had a great time. We thought the route was heavily lit in some previously dark areas, so kudos to NCF on that one. But yeah, the lead-up, however, had been slow somewhat, I would say, last month, but within the last 2 weeks, we thought patrons really bought and started buying into the festival and jumps, and we saw a really quick uptick in our numbers.
Band leader of Adinkra the Band, Ryan Leacock. Some tent managers are reporting a relatively good Picardy Grop finals, despite some challenges which affected the smooth running of the show. While hailing Kid Sight on his rebound after a technical problem interrupted his performance early in the competition, manager of the Shining Stars Calypso tent, Julie Seeley, tells Starcom Network News three-time champion AC deserved the victory.
I think it was a good showing. Yes, initially there were, you know, we started late. There were some technical difficulties and stuff like that. And my Lone Ranger in the finals, Kid Sight, you know, he suffered a little bit from it, but his comeback was fantastic. In my opinion, I think he led the first half, you know, but the second half would have been tight because we had some great songs in the second half. But overall, I think the winner deserved to win. That's the truth. And I must say this, that Kid Sight played in sixth position, where other persons had three and nine persons in a final. Kid Sight was still able to come out on top for some of those nine persons.
Manager of Shining Stars Calypso Tent, Julie Seeley. Meantime, former Calypso monarch iWeb was not pleased with the setup of the venue.
I didn't like the venue. The venue, it was a little tough, you know what I mean? The mud, then where the ramps were and those kinds of things. I prefer the setup that they had last year as far as, I guess, infrastructure is concerned.
Former Calypso monarch iWeb. And finally, it was a slow start to the annual Bridgetown Market despite major changes to the format to this year's event. Vendors took the usual spots along the mighty Griner Highway yesterday with the hope of getting sales from the anticipated crowd. Speaking with journalists at the event, the NCF's chief cultural officer, Andrea Wells, promised a post-mortem of the exercise would be conducted.
Well, so far, I think it's still early days yet. Everybody, I think, will do a full postmortem, and that will give me their full feedback after Grand Kaduma, which is the last big day. As you know, the market has seen some changes this year. We're trying to, I think, lighten the load environmentally on this stretch because we've had some issues with flooding when heavy rains have fallen and excessive dust in some cases. But we did hear the concerns of vendors who, for whom this is a big event, if not their biggest event and sales opportunity in the festival. So though we've modified, while the main focus is on the food and entertainment, we have a number of vendors who are servicing persons who still look out for this event as one of the capping events for the anniversary celebrations of Crop Over.
And that was the NCF's chief cultural officer, Andrea Wells. And that was the lunchtime edition of the latest from Starcom Network News. Starcom Network, a member of the OCM Group. I am Oliver Norville. Good afternoon.
It's Brass Tack Sunday, brought in association with Williams Industries, Inc. It is now 12:36 p.m. I'm Jamal Slocum, your moderator today. And with me in studio is David Ziggy Walcott. And I also have Richard Haynes, Adzil Stewart, and Christian Kendall Rock. In today's Daily Nation, the Sunday edition, we are seeing Caesar's Army conquers again. And Caesar's Army is one of the private jumps along with Native. And this year we saw the introduction during the 4-day morning jam period, because it's not the 4-day morning jam, but we saw during the time of which 4-day morning happens, the third private jump which emerged, which was a combination of Aura, Wheating, as well as Scorch. And many individuals are moving away from the 4-day morning jam because they're concerned with safety. We know of a period of time that there were several incidents. Thankfully, this year, according to all reports, it was a safe 4-day morning jam. And we thank Barbadians and, by extension, the Barbados Police Service for this, their contribution to a successful 4-day morning jam. But we recognize a lot of individuals are moving away from the public jump at 4-day morning jam to the private jumps. I'll come to Ziggy first, because I know that you produced 4-day morning before. What are your thoughts on the emerging private jumps?
It has added to the festival and again the patrons experience, different folks, different strokes. People have prefer to be in a private setting. Originally, when I ran 4-day morning, I thought that they shouldn't be on the same night as the national 4-day morning. I thought it should be a different on a different night. But that was just my thought. I thought that it would have taken away from the national production of 4-day morning. But now, as it's grown, you have Mixed Nuts, who were part of 4-day morning originally. They've now privatized. They've gone separate. There are a number of other groups who were part of the 4-day morning, and they've left for various reasons, and I guess for their patrons' experience as well. So from the business standpoint, they thought that was important, that they move on and have a private jump as opposed to participating in the local or the national 4-day morning. So it has added to the festival and gives people more options to be part of the festival for what's there to offer.
Christian Kendall, Can you share your thoughts on the emerging private gyms? There are some people who are against private gyms being a part, you know, having a national 4-day morning jam. And speaking to Adzil in preparation for this program, I know that 4-day morning jam is something that was introduced at a latter stage of the festival. But Christian, can you share your thoughts on the 4-day morning jam and the emerging private jams?
That's no problem, Jamal. You could hear me better now.
I can hear you.
We're having a bit of this.
Go right ahead. Earlier.
Yeah. So I know that you might think that this sounds strange coming from me, knowing that I'm a traditionalist when it comes to the Grand Kaduma route. But as it relates to 4-day morning, I don't know why we're trying to separate and call it privatization and all these things. All the bands, first of all, are private bands. I think it just adds to different levels. I think that for safety elements, I think that Bridgetown, and I have done it both in Bridgetown and outside of Bridgetown. And I think that Bridgetown has just become too cramped for the 4-day morning experience. So I think taking some of the bands, I think what can be done if we want to section it off better is maybe have different zones across the island where some bands are in Bridgetown, some bands might be in the northern side, maybe use the East Coast, for example, road. Bushy Park, I know you have both, last year I did Native and Mixed Nuts was up at Bushy Park, and it's both of those bands giving you that similar feeling as if you were in town, moving from one band into the next band and different things like that. So there might be a different approach. As Richard said earlier, things evolve and modernize. I don't see it going back to everybody being in town. I think it's also going to hamper the number of persons that partake within 4-day morning if we all merge back into one central location.
All right, thanks for that highlight. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon to you and your panel.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, first of all, I must congratulate all the Calypsonians, those of one of
those. I'm getting some serious feedback in your background. I don't know if it's that your radio is on or...
My radio is not on, and I called you to tell about the matter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if they rectify it or so. Yeah, I don't know why they're taking so long to correct the problem.
Okay.
And I have to pay my money, and I'm very upset. And I don't think about paying them no money, though. God put me in court. anyway, I must congratulate the Monarch for this year, yeah? Because competition is not easy. If you make one mistake, so be it, yeah? And I believe the judges would have been from either dealing with specific areas, whether it's dance, drama, music, voice projection, etc. So nobody shouldn't be complaining and stuff. Last year, Adrian Clark get licked because he make a mistake. So I don't feel the last thing should get best now. There are certain things that I don't really agree with, because I think if you're producing something, you should make sure everything is on point. Because look what happened with the audio and stuff like that in the beginning with those people. I feel that they should have bring on like somebody from the junior Calypso tent to test out the thing to see if it would have been working or not. They shouldn't test it out by the first person. I felt for the blind girl, you know what I mean?
They actually Destroyer, a former Calypsonian, a former Calypso monarch rather, he was one of the opening acts. There were no technical challenges at that point when Destroyer performed. My only concern when Destroyer opened was that the audio was a little low. But your point may be granted that, you know, we probably need to have more performers in the beginning before we actually start.
That's what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah.
To test it out, right? Yeah. And they can use the juniors. Those who are successful, they can use them, you know?
Okay.
What I would like to find out is, seeing that it's 50th year, if NCF had a book in relation from the gentleman said crop over start from the 70s to the current period. yeah? And in this book, it should have some type of database with all the Calypsonians, their pictures, their bios, the band leaders, the drawings from each band leaders and those sort of things. And they could even put those drawings in the museum, etc. Despite the fact that German said they should have the costumes stuck away or something like that. But that could be bulky too, yeah? And the museum can only hold so much, so they could have put it on film, yeah? And they should make sure that this thing is on YouTube and, you know, got it sorted, tucked away, because I think in the olden days, they also got tapes and stuff. And people like Winslow Jordan and Betty West and those sort of people who got information about the back in time. And Winston Jordan had a band, and I believe that his son Winslow, if he was crafty, he could have carried on the band, etc. Because succession planning is critical in these days, but black people don't think about succession planning. Yeah?
And I believe that earlier.
I believe that each Calypsonian, when they're submitting their song or sounds, they should submit a bio so that they can put it in the database for the book, because they should got some sort of information there. Because if you're a student at a university and you go to NCF and you want information, it is sad to see that they might not have the information that you need, and therefore you got to go and look for somebody to get information from, yeah? And I tend to think that the things from the first proposal to the current one, they should have like a week of like singing for everybody, yeah, to let people know who used to sing before, like pitch up and all.
Well, I believe those things were featured in the ceremonial deliveries of the last kings. The beginning of the festival, at the opening of the crop over, there is the vintage Calypso tent that happens. So you would have seen, or you would have heard rather, various performers throughout the festival. It was a grand affair, I must admit. It featured as far down as you had Mad was there. I remember there was a performance of Viper's song, the first Road March, I believe that was, Ting Tong. I think I have the name correct. But there were some elements included. But I do agree and share your opinion that, you know, there needs to be some recording or documenting rather of our history when it comes to crop over. I'm not necessarily a fan of more museums. I'll be upfront and say that. I think that, you know, yes, there are museums for carnivals, for instance. I believe Trinidad has one and Grenada has something to some extent. But I don't think there's a need for, I mean, we have Harleton Museum in Spikestown that hardly anybody frequents. The Barbers Museum doesn't have a wash band of people walking in there on a regular basis. So you can see how we can integrate it to one of the existing museums and probably have like a wing for crop over or something like that. But I don't necessarily agree that we should create another museum, as a previous caller stated. But I'm not sure if there's literature available on crop over, but I know the University of the West Indies, in particular Dr. Marcia Burroughs, has done extensive work. And Christian Kendall is emerging to be one of the modern day individuals documenting the history of crop over. But thank you so very much for calling and sharing your view. Down to brass tacks. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Jamal, and to the panel.
Good afternoon.
This is DG. So Jamal, first of all, congrats on your work thus far. I think you were born to be a moderator, and I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Right, all right. So I see this program as a continuation of the brass tacks Sunday of July 21st, where we looked at the culture of crop over. So today, when we look at the business of crop over, my thinking is in terms of the generation gap, right? Wherein we have persons like Mr. Stewart, who would have been there at the inception, and then we have the modern young person who's in their 20s, who's fresh out of school, who's attending UVA, et cetera. And if you were to ask persons who are, let's say a person who's 70, a person who's 20, You know, what are their views on cropover? What it is to the future of cropover? I would think you might get widely different answers. And I would think that the best version of a cropover would be incorporating the experience of the 70-year-old and the youthful energy and creativity of the 20-year-old, right? Because, again, we have to think of the future, but we also have need to learn from the past, right? So, again, when we think of the business cropover, that's where I'm looking at it. Because I find that even in terms of the average person on the street, you know, you hear every year the complaints from perhaps older persons that the music is not like it used to be, or the music from previous years was better than the music now. Wherein then you have younger persons now who are doing such excellent work, and yes, there are obviously it's highly subjective, but at the same time, you find that, in my experience as a younger person who was born in the 90s, I find that older persons just, you know, if a song came out for me in the last 10 years, it's automatically bad, right? And I don't think that's fair. No, I think we need to be fair to young people, because even in terms of the finals on Friday, you saw that there was a lot of AI being used in presentations. And when I watched two videos of the finals in the 90s, when I was a child, you know, there was no, you know, heavy technology then. It was more physical decorations and physical elements of a presentation. Right, but so in that way, technology has become so important, even in terms of competition, right? And I think this is where the future is going, where we have to incorporate technology, and that will involve, you know, more younger persons who will be leading the way in that regard. So I'll pause here, Jamal, for your feedback.
Well, I'll take. Thank you for your contribution. I'll lead to Christian Kendall to share his thoughts on the technological advancements of Cropover Festival, and, you know, even the inclusion of technology to be able to develop the festival further.
Thanks, Jamal. Before I just touch on that, I just wanted to point out to the caller before, in terms of like the research and the history. I do have to give it up to Michelle Springer at the National Cultural Foundation, who is research officer there. A lot of the information has started to be put on the NCF website under a cropover toolkit. That is what researchers use, students use. It documents all of the winners for all of the major competitions. It has some, and you can reach out to the research officer as well to get any information in terms of imagery and everything like that. As well as last year, starting actually the year before, at the Barbados Museum in their ICH temporary exhibition, there was a cropover section. So I do agree with you, Jamal, that there does not need to necessarily be an entire museum dedicated to the cropover festival, but rather just a section within one of the already existing museums, or maybe the soon-to-be museum that is to be at Newton, seeing that that is really the earliest account on record we have for the cropover, well, Harvest Home Festival that became cropover. As it relates to the technology aspect, technology will continue to play a role within the festival, and has to evolve. It is just how we do it. I don't necessarily know if so much of the AI is what is needed, because a lot of, depending on which AI program you use, the things can look very jokey and mock, instead of actually using actual actors or proper software. So I think that moving forward, both artists and promoters need to be very particular and specific with the programming of AI that they're using, because at the end of the day, it's still a product offering. Whether it's in a competition sense or whether it is in the event sense, you want the best experience for the viewer and for the participant of that particular event.
If I may ask, you know, we're talking the business side of it. I'm going to switch to Richard for a second. Richard, you know, I received a message earlier from a individual who would have indicated that they appreciate you recognizing that Beige over a period of time would have needed a sense of transformation, and having done it successfully for over 25 years, you know, at least recognizing a change was required. When do we do this as a crop over festival so that we can find the balance of being able to make a profit? And the individual even went to the extent of asking, do bands even make money in this climate? Is it financially viable? Richard?
It's extremely challenging for a band to make money. And that's why it's so critical for sponsors to get involved with the festival. The truth is that the actual product that Barbados presents is an all-inclusive product. And we created that product. Trinidad actually followed that model after Barbados created it. So the traditional Trinidad model was that you paid for your costume and then you bought your drinks on the road or you bought your push cart. Whereas what we inherited from our, you know, from our seniors was an all-inclusive model whereby food and drinks are free all day, including costume. And it's almost impossible to, not impossible, you can produce that product, but the cost would be horrendous unless you have sponsors on board. So I want to start by saying that you have to have that sponsorship definitely included for the bands to be successful.
But Richard, before you go further, you know, the reality is the NCF too is looking for sponsorship. And yes. And they're probably approaching the same pool of corporate Barbados, and they're fighting for the same pool of money. But on the flip side, you know, reality is that you have to take into consideration as well that, you know, are we building our business model around sponsorship only, especially in the setting that corporate Barbados is not that forthcoming at this point in time? What are your thoughts there?
Well, if you want to grow the festival, we have to find a way to incentivize corporate Barbados to step up at the end of the day. We can't pass the cost on to the revelers. I mean, they're pretty much at the peak of cost right now. People don't understand that bands charge, you know, under what they should be charging to make a profit in order for the customers to be happy. So the reality is that we have to have corporate involved. How do we incentivize them? That's a wider conversation, right? But at the end of the day, the reality is that, again, as I mentioned earlier, almost every business benefits from Kadouman. But a very important point, Jamal, in terms of keeping the festival fresh, what I have discovered over the 25-year period, and again, just my own analysis, is that, you know, you're hot for 3 years, right? And after 3 years, I don't care how good you are, right? Whether you're an artist, whether you're a band, whether you're a musician, after 3 years, people can get tired of you. So the festival has to reinvent itself every 3 years. It will get boring. And in order to do that, we have to keep young people coming into the festival. So you got to figure out, how do we engage corporate Barbados and how do we engage young talents to come into the festival and mentor them with the veterans, you know?
But, you know, beyond mass, Richard, not to cross you, but beyond mass, you know, you mentioned every 3 years you have to revisit it or reassess what you're doing. But are we throwing away too many of the elements of what makes Crop Over authentic when we take this approach?
Not at all. So, Jamal, again, Beige would not have been here for 25 years. So basically, our strategy, marketing strategy, always was to appeal to an 18 to 25-year-old female and a 26 to 35-year-old male. That was our sweet spot. Now, when we first started, we were in that demographic, right? We were the 18 to 25-year-olds. As we aged, we had to find ways to find out what do these youngsters want in order for our brand to remain relevant, all right? But we also were very respectful of the culture. And again, it goes back to having a theme that reflects something Barbadian or from Barbadians. Without that theme, without that concept, we'd have gone lost. However, you have to remember that without that youthful energy, right, you will lose your way. You know, Beige would not have been there for so long if we continued marketing the same market we did at day one. We had to evolve that market, and we did so successfully. At the end of our 25 years, we were still attracting young people in the band and maintaining our mature market, and that was critically important. So without evolving your, you can evolve your brand and still remain culturally relevant, but you have to understand what's going on today.
But yeah? Richard, I'll say this to you. I am concerned that elements of the original festival, beyond mass itself, elements of the original festival, we are losing it year after year. I believe that there's a need for a cobbler pot. I believe that there's a need for cavalcades. I know you have experience, tremendous experience.